Hey there, and welcome to the second episode of the Frontiers Kaleidoscope podcast. I hope you all enjoyed last week's episode. This week, there's lots of reading material. It's really a bunch of nice stuff that was published by various authors on the web in the last week or so. There's also some bits of just general news that I'd like to make you aware of and point you in the direction so you can find more information, some shiny new tools. Then most of you, maybe not all of you, have probably seen Ryan Dahl's Node.js Regrets talk that he gave at, I think it was a JSEU conference. And then Deno, something you mentioned at the end of that talk that sounds real interesting. And of course, my usual suggestions of other podcasts that you should give a listen to. So let's dive in. Let's get into articles around the web that I've found and found particularly interesting. Over on his blog, Cheng Hoi-Ying, I hope I pronounced his name correctly, wrote a wonderful article about math and its role on front end. It's something we don't often think about, but it's actually something that can really take your, especially CSS, to the next level. If you think about stuff like responsive typography and responsive layout and stuff like these pure CSS triangles, not when using CSS shapes, but just when using, for example, border radius and borders in general to create like a combination of colored and transparent borders, and you create these little triangles, and then you can combine that with arithmetic and geometry, and you can create all kinds of cool shapes, and you can animate them as CSS, and it's super exciting. Actually, I would highly recommend you go reading this article, Math in the Front End. And when you've done that, and if your math skills are not quite where they used to be, and I'm not talking your math whiz, you're working on string theory type stuff, just, you know, high school math, your general geometry and arithmetic stuff, I would definitely suggest, you know, head over to Khan Academy and brush up on your skills, and then take those math skills and use the calc function and just go create some cool stuff on CodePen.io. I've certainly been playing around there, creating some different shapes and animating them. It's a whole bunch of fun, and it really unlocks a new world. So I'm thankful for that article. Next, Adactio, aka Jeremy Keith, has written on his blog about progressive web apps, and that there's a lot of information on that these days. And it kind of feels like if you're not in this whole new methodology, which I love, and there's definitely a place for, but we can't all just be working on new things. Sometimes you're working on older apps that you can't just now sit down and rewrite as a React app or some other framework-based single-page app. And it often feels like if you're not in that workflow, in that methodology, you're kind of out of luck when it comes to all the great stuff with regards to progressive web apps. And especially when it comes to things like offline first and service workers. Jeremy writes to say, that's not really entirely the case. All that you really need is HTTPS, a manifest file, and a service worker. With that said, of course, there's more work than just creating two files and making sure your protocol is HTTPS, and you're good to go. But those are really the three things, the three building blocks you need to get you on your way. And you can go read the article you posted, HTTPS plus service worker plus web app manifest equals progressive web app, to find out the details. And as a bonus, over on his Medium blog, he posted the first chapter of his book, Going Offline. I highly suggest this. I have bought the book, and can't wait to start reading it. Moving on to the next thing. I'm working on a little side project, learning more about GraphQL, and building my first little React app based on the GitHub GraphQL API. And so I've been thinking like, okay, I've heard about this thing called Apollo, but then there's this GraphQL people, and then there's Relay, and then there's something of Relay Modern, and it's like, what is all this? And so I started looking for an article that can give me an idea of what's the difference between Relay and Apollo. And on the GraphQL blog, there's a good article explaining like difference between the Relay GraphQL client and Apollo. And spoiler alert, if you are not using React, you're basically going to want to go for Apollo, because Relay is tightly coupled to React, whereas Apollo is framework agnostic. But even so, it's worth reading that article, because there's a lot of good information just generally about what GraphQL is and a GraphQL client specifically offers. And then with regards to moving on, there's a great article by Konstantin Tarkas on Relay Modern, which is what you'll be using now if you're going to be using Relay with React. So far, I have to say Relay Classic seemed a little, complex, really hard to get a lot out of it. You have to put in a lot, which isn't a bad thing, but sometimes it feels like it was too much. Relay Modern feels a lot simpler. I mean, I've been able to do the basics of what I wanted in pretty short amount of time. So all of these articles that's been linked up, and I'll give you the link to the show notes at the end of the podcast, are really good. I would suggest reading all of them if you wanting to, or if you are or want to play around with these tools. Now, as part of working on this side project, I wanted to add a CSS processor, specifically SAS. Like I say, if you do React in the React way, then kind of having a preprocessor like SAS isn't really needed, because of the way that you tie your CSS to the modules. You kind of writing modular CSS and all that stuff's good, and the need for that kind of goes away. But with that said, there's something to be said for muscle memory, and there's still some really good stuff in SAS that just makes writing your CSS more fun, I guess. Let's go with that. And so if you want to add the SAS preprocessor, or any other preprocessor for that matter, I linked up the docs, or the React docs, where they explain how to add this in. It's super easy once you follow it. And this is specifically if you've started your app using the wonderful Create React App utility. There's also an interesting side note on there. They chose to use Node SAS Chokidar as the package, as opposed to Node SAS. And their reasoning, when you go read the link that I have there in the post, actually is making me going to be switching to the Chokidar version as well on all the other projects where I'm currently using Node SAS. So even that by itself is really worth looking into. Then over on Tim Kablik's blog, he wrote an article about prioritizing the long tail of performance. Side note, I'm currently working with Tim on MDN web docs to improve the performance of that project. And so no bias. I think Tim is just absolutely wonderful at what he does. He's a great guy to work with. And anything he writes on performance is definitely worth taking time and reading it. And this post is definitely one of those. Then over on Eric A. Meyer's blog, he wrote about specificity. It's always a hard word to say. In the not has matches pseudo classes, which he says are not really counted as pseudo classes. So there's already a little bit of confusion there. But that be as it may, what he talks about here is the fact that currently, if you're using one of those pseudo classes, working out specificity and how it affects it is really simple, because we can only have one simple selector. But that is going to change, and soon you would be able to write something like div not, and then in your parentheses you can actually have, say, for example, one dot one, so class one, class two, and then a navbar, an ID navbar. So let me try and mouth blog this. Mouth code div colon not parentheses dot one comma dot two comma hash navbar close parentheses p. So how do you calculate specificity in that case? We have two classes and an ID. The TLDR is kind of the same rules that would apply outside of those parentheses apply now to the whole selector. So navbar will be the one that takes priority, and then class one and two will be ignored. But I'm not going to try and explain all of that in this podcast episode. Best thing is to head to the show notes, click on the link, and go read Eric's great post. Whew, so that was a lot. But I warned you beforehand. Let's move on to noteworthy releases. I still don't have the full set of releases I had in the earlier year days of Frontenders Kaleidoscope. That's set to change from next week because, spoiler alert, side note, side project I've been working on is basically a dashboard to see all new releases for projects that I watch on GitHub. I'll talk more about that in future episodes. So what I do have is there's a new release of Node version 10.3.0. Go check that out. Then WCAG, the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, version 2.1 is now a W3C recommendation. And there's some really nice notable additions to this version. One, the first one being it provides updated guidance, including support for user interactions using touch handling and more complex gestures, and avoiding unintended actions on an interface. So that's great. That is going to target and more give us more detailed handling of interfaces that's not mouse-based. And then also it extends the contrast requirements to graphics, which is great because that was always something I was a little unsure of. But it's going to give us some more clarity on that. It also introduces new requirements for text and layout customizations to support better visual perception of web content and controls. And then lastly, for users with cognitive, language, or learning disabilities, there's now a requirement to provide information about the specific purpose of input controls, as well as additional requirements to support timeouts due to inactivity. And honestly, this again goes to that whole thing where making a website accessible to everyone just makes it better for everyone. So these are really some great recommendations. I look forward to digging into them and applying them to the projects I work on, and I hope you will do the same. Next up, the bits. Little news things that I don't really go into at all on the show notes, but do provide links so you can read more. First of all, Node.js 8.10 runtime is now available in AWS Lambda World. So if you write serverless functions, great news, you can now use Node.js 8.10. Then the Node.js project also introduced the latest release in the line, the 10x ones. As I mentioned before, 10.3 is out. There's also more information about end of life for others and your upgrade path that they suggest. A really good read, really worthwhile, especially if you work with Node a lot. And then some good news from the Chrome folks. Chrome 68 will ship with freshest service workers by default. So it's good news. The details, click on that link and go read it. It's really a good move, and I'm glad they're doing it, and hope other browsers will follow suit. Let's dive right into the tool chest. So I have two, or is it three? Three utility slash apps that I'm going to introduce you to. The first one is called keyframes.app. So CSS animations has really changed the way that we animate the user interface and just add little things to make the user experience better on the web, and sometimes just add a little bit of fun and whimsy to our UI. But some of these interactions can be pretty complex to write. I mean, that's why you have stuff like Lottie that can take stuff from Adobe After Effects and then convert it into, like, I guess, a combination of JavaScript and CSS to create these complex animations. Writing all this by hand can be challenging, and it can be time-consuming, and it's not always the best use of your time. So keyframes.app comes in and gives you a really nice UI, web-based UI that you can go and play around. It's got different sliders and toggles and all the good stuff that you would expect from an app like this. Once you're happy with the animation that you have produced, you can export your code, and if what it's generated in terms of the raw CSS is not quite up to the standard that you'd like it to be, hey, you can tweak it, and it just saves you a whole bunch of time up front. I think it's really worth taking a look at. Link in the show notes. The next one is called The Fuck, and I didn't just swear for no reason. It's a tool that you can use in your terminal, and basically imagine you've ever typed, and I know this has never happened to you, but you've typed this whole long terminal entry command that you're going to run, and you hit enter and it says, oh, command X that is not known. And you're like, no, really? The fuck? I just misspelled it. Well, now you can just type fuck, hit enter, and it'll suggest to you what you probably wanted to run. And just hit enter again, and there it goes. And the thing that you intended originally is going to run. So it's called a magnificent app which corrects your previous console command. It's a little fun, simple utility, but I've already found it useful. So, yeah, give it a whirl. See if you like it. Then from the Google, that can work. Let's go with that. From Google Labs, they have released a new web app plugin called Critters. So in a sense, nothing new about this. It inlines your critical CSS, but then it also lazy loads the rest. What's also different about Critters to other webpack plugins that you might have used or be aware of is that it doesn't use a headless browser, and so it bases the rules on the document as opposed just to a concept like, for example, above the fold, which makes this quite interesting. And I'm definitely going to try this out on my side project Newman that I've kind of hinted at. Yes, the name's going to be Newman because Newman is from Seinfeld. I love Seinfeld, and Newman is also a postman that brings you news, and that all makes sense in the end when I reveal the final project. Being a little cryptic here, but you need to be right sometimes. And yeah, it has a super cute mascot, so if nothing else, that's good enough reason. To quote from the repo, it's a little different from other options because it doesn't use a headless browser to render content. The trade-off allows Critters to be very fast and lightweight. It also means Critters inlines all CSS rules used by your document rather than only those needed for above-the-fold content. If this sounds like something that you'd be interested in trying, links in the show notes. And in closing this week, something to watch, some things to listen to. First thing to watch, over on YouTube, the recording of Ryan Dahl's 10 Things I Regret About Node.js that he talked about at the JSConf EU 2018 talk. It's a great talk from the inventor of Node.js about things that, looking back, he probably would have done differently. Some things that the project has done since he left the project that we'd probably have done a little differently, but a lot of those things are kind of set in stone now, and it's going to be very, very hard to change. It's kind of like the whole scenario of a huge ship turning very slowly. It's going to be hard, if not impossible. And at the end of it, it's a very personal talk. It's very good. It's really worth watching. But at the end, he hints at this new thing that he's been working on called Deno. Could this be the future of Node? Could this be not the future of Node, but a competitor to Node.js? Maybe. Maybe it's one of those things where if you think about what happened with Yarn and NPM, like Yarn came out and it like really made the guys from NPM sit up and take notice about stuff that people in the ecosystem really wanted. And NPM is the better for it, to the point where I don't really see why you'd use Yarn still over NPM. Of course, everyone has their favorite tools, but in terms of what Yarn gave you when it was initially released and what NPM gives you now, there's very little feature discrepancies there. Is this what Deno might do for Node, or is this something new that we can target, that we can have two targets now, or is one going to dominate the other one? Of course, a lot of speculation going out there. We'll have to wait and see. Definitely very interesting to look at. Definitely very interesting to just hit the watching little button on GitHub and see how things, what happens in that project. Maybe contribute it. Maybe try building something with it. It's really cool. It's exciting. I like it when these kinds of things happen. Go check out the talk. Go check out Deno. Exciting. Exciting times. Moving on. Listen up. So, first other podcast episode that I think you would enjoy is over on the Web Platform podcast. They're talking WebAssembly, something that I still want to play with. There's so many things these days, it's absolutely nuts. You don't know what to take and not take up and play with and not play with. But WebAssembly is definitely one of those things. If I ever do get around to playing with WebAssembly, I'm most likely going to do that along with Rust, and then of course target JavaScript in the end. We'll use the two together. It's all good. I don't know yet. I'm going to be definitely looking at this more as it evolves. Let me give you some notes from the show notes, their show notes, because I'm rambling at the moment. So they're talking about what exactly is WebAssembly. Is it a replacement for JavaScript? No. But listen, do I need to learn C++ if I want to use it? Also no. But there's so many questions about this very cool technology. So listen to Thomas Neisted and Ben Smith as they give answers to all these questions and many more. It was a great episode. I really enjoyed it. It made me even more excited to want to just do something with WebAssembly, even if to just, you know, understand. Then over on the change log, they talk about, this is specifically JS Party, which is part of the change log. They go over the Node's recently released survey, and that's very interesting, really interesting. They also touch on Ryan Dahl's regrets and Deno, and as they call it, the elephant in the room. And then, of course, it's still under discussion, reactions to MicroHub, aka Microsoft buying GitHub. Love it, hate it. I'm going to still stay positive on this one. I'm really liking more and more of what I hear of what comes out of Microsoft these days. I really think that they're going to do a good thing. I think they're going to push GitHub to the next level. I think GitHub was struggling. I didn't even know this, but they were struggling a bit, and they might have had their wheels spinning, and you know, they focus on other places because of that. And having been bought by Microsoft and being in this more, let's say, financially secure position, maybe the focus can come back to what their users want more than anything else. So I'm going to stay optimistic about this one, but definitely have a listen to the episode and, you know, see what they think. Last but not least, the latest episode of the Shop Talk Show has been out. Yeah, Shop Talk Show. And they talk with Chris Epstein from Inkscape. No, let me try that again. Chris Epstein from LinkedIn. Quite different, about CSS blocks and CSS optics, or just optics. I've been heard about this a lot, especially CSS blocks have blown up on GitHub. And this is, again, something that I need to find a place that I can use it so I can see exactly what it is. It's a modular way of building CSS. It's kind of based on BEM, but it's more than that. And when you couple that with optics, you get insanely crazy optimization and performance improvements. I mean, listen to the episode for the details so I don't lie here, but if I remember correctly, they took down their homepage for LinkedIn CSS from something like 195k to 9k compressed. I mean, that's insane. Of course, it gets rid of stuff that you don't actually use on that specific page, but it also rewrites your selectors and then rewrites your templates to use the new selectors. So you can use, you know, your long, easy to read, easy to understand class names in your selectors, but then this will go and rewrite them. Basically, you know, like what JavaScript compilers have been doing. Same thing to CSS. It's really, really interesting. I'm looking forward to playing with this. Optics is kind of neutral. It currently, CSS blocks is really the only big framework or tool or utility that's using optics. But optics can be built into something like React. It can be built into something like Vue.js. It can be built into whatever. It's very agnostic in that regard. So optics itself is a very interesting project to look at. CSS blocks is probably what most of us will end up using. Very interesting. Again, the front-end world just never ceases to amaze me and is moving ahead at the speed of light. There's so much to do. It's an exciting time to be on the web. That's everything for this week. I hope I didn't ramble too much. I hope I didn't talk too fast. New to this, bear with me. And okay, so that's all for this week, but before I go, a couple of housekeeping things. Head over to bit.ly/fkpodcast002 for the show notes. That's bit.ly/fkpodcast002. FKPodcast002. And please star heart and favorite this episode wherever you listen to it on your podcatcher of choice. And if you are so inclined, please head over to the Apple Podcasts and give me a review there and some stars. I would really appreciate that. Thanks so much for tuning in. All the best. See you next week. Stay curious.